This podcast is produced by energeticcity.ca, your only local and independent news in Northeast BC. To support local news and this podcast, go to energeticcity.ca/join to find out more.
Welcome to the podcast Secrets of the North, a podcast about true crime and mysteries in Northern Canada. We are recording on the traditional and unceded territory of the Dunhuizen peoples. I'm your host, Emily Gallen.
And I'm your co-host, Janelle Opryszynski. Our podcast may contain mature content. Listener discretion is advised.
Oh, hi, Janelle.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm so good.
That is good. Do you have any updates for me today?
No, my spooky little butt's not doing much right now.
Okay, I respect. We've got like a new kind of recording studio thing happening up here.
Yeah,
new chairs.
New chairs, new table.
New table, damn.
Thanks, Energetic City.
Hashtag energetic. Energize my butt. Actually, those other chairs were fucking awful.
Yeah, these new chairs are, they're very nice.
Yeah, they aren't broken.
Yeah.
Which is ideal.
And I can touch my feet to the ground.
I love that.
So my feet aren't falling asleep.
Yeah.
And I'm not like worried if I have to move a little bit that I'm going to fall out of the chair and ruin our record.
Well, I mean, let's just get into it today because I don't have too much for updates either. Just our website, we have
a website.
Yeah, we got a website. It's secretsofthenorthpodcast.weebly.com, and we've got some unsolved cold cases on there as well as resources for doing any of your own searches or your own investigating, your own sleuthing.
There's also a great spot on there that you can reach out to us if you have anything you want to share with us, or if you have any spooky stories for me. Like I mentioned a couple episodes ago, I am lacking in the locals, and I really want to talk more about the spookiness that happens in Fort St. John. I know it's here.
I want to hear about
Where are you?
Yeah, where's...
Put your butt in my face.
God, that sounds beautiful. Well, then, why do I always say well then?
Well then.
Jeepers creepers. Well then. Let's go to
whoever's listening. Do a little drinking game every time Emily says well then.
Well then. Well then.
Well then.
So, bless me. All right. Let's take you to a favorite little corner of ours. Crime corner. The incident I'm going to talk about today, Janelle, is actually... So, I found out all this information by going through the coroner's inquests that are actually public. And typically, so if it's involving, I believe it's involving a child or the police, there will be inquests into the death. And you can actually read the reports publicly online. So I took all that information, not from too many sources, but they'll be listed on the show notes. And here we go. Let me slip into my podcast voice.
I'm ready.
This incident began on July 16th, 2015, in the early morning, when the RCMP received a call about a disturbance at the Stonebridge Banquet Facility in Dawson Creek, BC. Two uniformed police officers rushed to the scene, and it was shortly after 7 p.m. when they encountered two civilians outside the banquet facility near the Fix Grill restaurant. It was at this point that civilian witnesses noticed a figure approaching. The figure turned out to be a man named James McIntyre, who was concealed behind a Guy Fawkes mask and a dark hoodie. Witnesses recalled the tension in the air as the police officers observed something in McIntyre's hand. The officers then asked about the object in his hand. What unfolded next was a critical moment of decision. Mr. McIntyre raised his hand, revealed a closed switchblade knife, which he had then opened. The tension quickly escalated as the police officers drew their firearms and shouted at him to drop his weapon. But McIntyre seemed undeterred. Civilian witnesses watched in shock as McIntyre, knife in hand, approached the police officers. The police continued to issue stern commands for him to disarm himself, but he moved forward. With McIntyre closing in within a dangerous range of 8 to 10 feet of one officer, we'll call him Officer 1, a desperate measure was taken. Officer 1 deployed pepper spray to try to subdue McIntyre. However, it seemed to have little effect. McIntyre persisted, forcing Officer 1 to seek cover behind a pillar. McIntyre's attention then shifts to the second officer, Officer 2. The police repeated their commands, but McIntyre remained unyielding. The tense standoff reached its climax when a gunshot pierced the air. Civilian witnesses and Officer 1 were unable to see the exact moment when McIntyre was shot. Officer 2, who had been facing the advancing threat, provided his account. McIntyre had defied every command, closing the gap until he was feet away from Officer 2, who, in self-defense, fired his service revolver and a bullet found its target. The sound of the gunshot reverberated through the area, and the witnesses were left in shock. But the scene didn't end there. Officer 1 and Officer 2 continued to yell at McIntyre to drop the knife, reporting the shooting on their radios. Eventually, the knife fell from McIntyre's grasp. A civilian offered to retrieve it, but the police held them back. Officer 1 approached and kicked the knife away. At that moment, a third police officer, Officer 3, arrived on scene and joined Officer 1 in handcuffing McIntyre. During this process, Officer 1 discovered a second knife in McIntyre's back pocket. As McIntyre lay on the ground, bleeding from his wounds, Officer 1 and 3 attempted to locate the source of bleeding and provide initial aid. It was a frantic and chaotic scene, with everyone realizing the severity of the situation. BC Emergency Health Services had already been alerted to the shooting through police dispatch at 7:21 p.m. and an ambulance arrived promptly at 7:23 p.m. A paramedic assessed McIntyre, noting his weak pulse and extensive bleeding. Time was of the essence, and they rushed him to the hospital. However, hope faded rapidly, because within mere seconds of arriving to the hospital, his pulse disappeared. The emergency room was prepared for his arrival, but despite their best efforts, he showed no signs of life again. A pathologist later revealed the cause of death to be a gunshot wound to his right groin, which had injured his femoral artery, resulting in massive blood loss. Through the inquest, the jury delved into the procedures and training of police officers involved. An expert explained the use of force model employed by RCMP, as well as their training in crisis intervention and de-escalation. They also discussed RCMP first aid training and various use of force options and tools currently under consideration. But who was James McIntyre in all this, and really how did this come to be? According to the Alaska Highway News, and I quote, "Both McIntyre's mother and sister say they don't know what led to the standoff, which happened after another protester had actually flipped tables and tore up maps at a public open house on Site C construction." Oh. So, a little bit of the backstory here. There was some Site C meetings happening.
At the hotel?
Either at the hotel or at that bar, like near that location. So, for those not in this area, the Site C construction was very controversial, and the $8.8 billion BC Hydro project began later that month, actually. His mother said that he was never in trouble. "It's devastating for me," she said. "It has been this whole past year. I will never know what got into him that evening." Wanda McIntyre said that she didn't know what kind of mask the police found on her brother, or whether he was even involved in any online activism. His sister said to the reporters, and I quote, "He was very much an environmentalist. He was always trying to recycle and do stuff like that, but he wasn't an extremist," she said on the phone from her home in Grand Prairie. "I don't know how he even found out about it, whether he knew someone who was into it and brought him into the fold. I had no idea. He never talked to me about it." So it sounds like they're really questioning why, and they're confused. Yeah. If he wasn't like an extremist for the Site C, what brought him there? Veronica McIntyre had the responsibility of raising James and his four siblings as a single mother. His early education took place in the neighboring village of Pouskoupi and at Dawson Creek Central Middle School. Later, the family relocated to Grand Prairie, where he successfully graduated from St. Joseph's Catholic School. Following in his brother's footsteps, McIntyre ventured into the trades, dedicating years to his work as a welder at various mills across northern BC and Alberta. As far as his immediate family knew, he maintained a clean lifestyle, abstaining from smoking, drinking, or drug use. He had a preference for staying close to home due to his aversion to driving, actually. He diligently saved his earnings, channeled them into attending model train conventions throughout North America.
I love that.
McIntyre cultivated pen pal relationships with several collectors and ventured to conventions in Prince George, Reno, Nevada, and Berkeley, California. I love a pen pal.
That is so cool.
Around 2008, he returned to Dawson Creek and joined the food service industry at Chances Casino, where he garnered recognition with several Employee of the Month awards.
Aww.
He's killing it.
Just seems like a nice guy.
Yeah. Wanda, a family member, mentioned James' commitment to recycling. Even before the casino implemented a recycling system, he diligently recycled the plastics, milk jugs, bottles, and cans nearby. Okay. That's good.
He cared. Yeah. He seemed like a very nice man, and it's a stumper. Like, what happened?
Well, his dedication to environmental causes extended, to his concerns about Site C, apparently, the dam project. Mm-hmm. He frequently discussed it with his mother, expressing his worries about the dam's impact on the Peace River Valley and the displacement of dozens of landowners.
Yeah.
Veronica McIntyre expressed her bewilderment as James' uncharacteristic decision to don a mask and engage with police on July 16th. She said that James wasn't particularly fond of masks. It actually might have even deterred him from pursuing a welding career because of the discomfort of wearing those masks while working. He did have one mask that I remember, she said, recalling a Phantom of the Opera costume mask she had ordered for him for a company Halloween party. That's the only mask I knew he had.
Who doesn't want to be the Phantom? Christine!
Recommendations from the inquest and coroner's report were given, and you can read those online and read the responses that the third parties had. I won't go into great detail. We literally don't have time for it today. But if you want more information about that and that inquest, I will link specifically where you can go and read the entire report. But Janelle, there's more inquests in this area. Mm-hmm. I found about, I think, six more. And out of those six inquests, four were listed as accidental and two were listed as homicide. When I read more about those deaths in the area that involved the RCMP, they were accidental overdoses while in custody, as well as death by shooting from RCMP members. There were also some medical conditions noted in certain inquests as a factor of the death. So they died via a specific way. They said there's an underlying health issue. They did have heart problems, they, et cetera, right?
Yeah.
What caught me by surprise, though, was I didn't recall hearing about, like, really any of those incidents. I think they would have made a bigger splash in the paper, in the news.
I agree, yeah.
I believe the ones that were listed as homicide were due to shooting, like the RCMP were cleared in all the three cases that I read. They had that's the force
just
that
cause. Had to happen. Yeah, they had just cause to use weapon or whatever.
There's some pretty crazy ones out there too.
Well, we all know that police brutality is real. I mean, I don't think
That was the tricky thing about this case. I'm like, oh, do I want to talk about it? Because I don't want to.
It's hard because realistically, like in Canada, it exists, but it's not talked about as much as it is, especially, over the last 4 years, what happened in the States during COVID with George Floyd and all of that eruption, just really bringing it to the forefront. I think it's just on our minds. I think everybody knows it's real. We all know systemic racism is extremely real in Canada. And I think people don't want to believe it and they want to be naive to it. But I also think that there are times at the end of the day, like a policeman is still a person. I know that they're the police, but like when he takes that badge off and your uniform, you're still just a man or a woman and you get scared.
Not yet a man, not yet a woman.
Love Britney. But you know, it's like at the end of the day, fear is still real and you can do as much training as you think you can do. And I mean, he probably even thought maybe he was making the right choice by doing a disarm shot, obviously to the legs. Not like he was going chest or head. He wasn't trying to kill him. I genuinely don't think he was trying to kill that man at all.
I didn't even think about that.
To me, it seemed like a disarm shot because shooting in the leg or the foot is like a disarming shot. You're not trying to kill them. You're just trying to get them to go down so that you are now safe and you can disarm them. So I don't think that officer probably had any intent of killing him. And it was just super unfortunate that it hit the femoral artery because there's nothing you can do at that point.
Or they don't have very good aim.
That too.
That's also
But I awkward. Also don't think that a lot of, I don't think that our police shoot a lot in the field.
I don't, I've shot one gun in my life.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I grew up on a farm. I shouldn't say that. I didn't grow up on a farm. I grew up near farms. And then my dad bought an acreage when I was in high school. And we would shoot guns all the time at the acreage because he really wanted me to learn how to shoot. And so we shot like gophers and stuff like that quite often. And I would also go to the shooting range with my mom a lot because my mom loves to shoot a gun. So we would go to the shooting ranges in Edmonton.
I'm just trying to picture you.
I prefer rifles. Yeah, I prefer rifles. I hate handguns.
Actually, I can picture you.
22
you
bolt
are
action.
More believable picturing that than me. Could you imagine me? What if I was like just like open carrying right now, just like zip?
I could see you with like a sawed off shot,
something like with eyeballs on it, so that when you look at it, you're like or dangly balls on it.
Yeah, I was gonna say your gun would have a butt.
My
gun, you'd turn it around, and the butt of the gun would be an actual butt.
Oh my god, yes. No, maybe I'm about to buy a gun now. Jeez.
Just to like loop it back to that, I really don't think that, in my opinion, I don't think he was even thought that would have killed him.
I'd be interested to know more too about was he doing any online presence? Did he have any influence from other people? Did someone ask him to do this? Was it mental health concerns?
And there was there like a toxicology report with the coroner's report? Was there like anything deemed in his system at the time?
I didn't read about anything in his system at all. I just noticed from the one news article, they said that he was not known to even smoke cigarettes.
Yeah, that's what, like, from the quote you said from his mom. Weird. That's a hard one. That is a hard
one. And was he, you know, an environmentalist or like, an, like they said, like, you what? Like, to him, to them, he did not seem like an extremist. I know some extremists. Yeah. Stay away.
Yeah, extreme, that's sad. That's a hard one.
Well, that's my shorty today, Janelle. So take me somewhere spooky.
Let's transition over to just something a little lighter, but also heavier at the same time. So I have pretty,
that's what she said.
I have a pretty fun story this week. I actually have a local story. I was told that I could share her name. Her name's CJ. Hi,
shout
CJ.
Out CJ.
Thank you so much. I got told this at work the other day. So that was really fun. So I will try my best to reiterate it the best way, the way that she told me. So
lay it on me.
Let's set the mood. It is probably, she said it was last summer. So last summer she went to bed. It was hot.
It was hot.
It was smoky. Yeah. Exactly. So it was like very red.
Eerie.
In the room. Like she said, it was like early morning and her room was kind of having like that red glow from like the smoke and the sun coming up. So she woke up and she woke up to feeling like somebody was watching her.
Hate it.
And when she opened her eyes, there was a figure above her.
No.
That was just pure black, and she felt like it was like a void she could just look into, and he never ended. And he had a hat. I think
everything should end. He had a hat on.
He had a hat.
Did he have a teeny weeny beanie on?
No, it was like like a.
Can you fucking imagine?
With a brim.
Okay.
Like, not like a top hat, but like not also a fedora, like kind of an in between of those two.
Yeah.
And a trench coat style coat, and she
in the summer,
was completely
dude.
Paralyzed. She said her eyes were open and she could see him over her, but she could not move.
Does this ring a bell of like a common phenomenon?
Yes.
Okay. I'll let you get to it.
So she said that like she just closed her eyes and like tried to almost like shake her head off of it. And when she opened her eyes again, he was gone and she could move.
Okay.
And everything was fine. So when she told me this story, this is a story I've heard before.
Okay.
And this is a story I've heard a lot.
That's not ideal.
I have a very close friend of mine, actually, Devin. He and I used to do paranormal investigating together.
Okay. Yep. Okay.
And Devin,
he's part of your previous cult.
Yes. He also had run-ins with this shadow figure. And the shadow figure is known as the Hat Man.
The Hat Man. I listened to this podcast called My Skeptical Sister, and they talk about the Hat Man.
So Devin also has experienced the Hat Man. And this is, there have been sightings and people speaking of the Hat Man more so since probably the early 2000s. There was like one like really old, I don't know, blog that I found from like 1999 that mentioned Hat Man. But everything else I've found has been like 2000s and now.
Okay.
Hat Man is just a phenomena that people are seeing this man in a sleep paralysis state.
I've got a couple of thoughts already. First, the trench coat. I mean, maybe it's giving me post 90s vibes. Remember trench coats were kind of like in,
yeah,
but not in a like.
Oh yeah.
So I've got an issue with his outfit, and you heard it here first. I've got an issue with the trench coat.
Yes.
And I don't. Second of all, trench coat in the summer.
Trench coat all the time. I've never heard of the Hat Man being seen not wearing a hat and not wearing a trench coat.
I guess, or he wouldn't be the Hat Man.
Yeah, that's always his thing. And the thing, too, is he's not just seen in Canada and the U.S. It's all over the world. People see this figure in sleep paralysis. So is it our minds, or is he actually coming to certain people? Because sleep paralysis, of course, as we know, is very real.
Yeah.
Before...
But not a dude and
no,
not a void, like, a black void with
and before modern science and modern technology as well, people didn't really know what sleep paralysis was. So in the like early days, I think the earliest
note of sleep paralysis dates back to like 1664.
Gross.
When a Dutch physician first described it as the incubus or the nightmare was the first description of what sleep paralysis was. And there is sleep paralysis lore throughout every culture, deeming it not to be sleep paralysis, but it is a time when either like a shaman or some type of like sleep demon is attacking you at your most like
vulnerable
state. Exactly.
Well, you and I, we recently chatted about our dream dramas.
Yes.
We listeners, we're wild. We're wild in our dreams.
Yeah.
We are the people that every night have very vivid, vivid dreams. Mm-hmm. Mine are beautifully, you know, fueled by anxiety.
Yes.
My husband said the other day, he's like, I'm not a psychologist. He's like, but I think you have anxiety. They're like, I can't pack enough. I can't get anything in my suitcase. I always have dreams that I'm going on a trip and I can't find my fucking contacts.
Oh, it's the contacts specifically?
Contacts.
Mine is always, I just can't find what I want. Or one that I have a lot is it's a Halloween party and I don't have a costume. That stresses me out so much.
That stress, I'm stressed just hearing about that.
Yeah. And it's always, for us, we moved so much in 2020. I have so many stress dreams of having to bring stuff back to Edmonton, coming back to Fort St. John. Then I'm in Edmonton and oh my God, my shift starts in an hour back in Fort St. John and I'm in Edmonton and like dreams like that. But basically what this is breaking down to is that it's not quite awake and you're not quite asleep either. So you're kind of in this in-between state. And like we know, science now understands that it's just a weird glitch. It's unfortunately, like it happens in the brain. Because when you're in your REM, your body is paralyzed. Okay. So that you're not moving and hitting and acting out things in your dream. So your body naturally paralyzes you during your REM sleep. But that separation of you coming out of REM and coming back into consciousness sometimes can get delayed in the brain. So you come back visibly and you can open your eyes and see, but you're still paralyzed from your REM. And that's what sleep paralysis is.
I just realized that you've used like two 90s bands in your sentence. You said incubus and then you also said REM. Tight. I love it.
I love that.
My dad, we read it on a previous episode, but he wrote in or was interviewed by a journalist who wrote a book and has a story in there, and his is about sleep paralysis as well. Mm. With like a light though. He had a nice bright light. He didn't have void ghost man with
and that's the thing. Sleep paralysis can be anything. Like I have actually I used to work with a guy who told me he would get sleep paralysis a lot when we worked at John Deere. And he had one where it would be a balloon. He would wake up and there would be a balloon floating in his room. And he'd be like,
ew,
on a string and everything.
Oh.
And it would just be a balloon like floating and it would float out his door. And he knew he was in sleep paralysis when he would see the balloon.
What is going on in our brains?
The brain is crazy. Or are we seeing things that we can't in our normal state?
Like parallel worlds.
Exactly. So one thing, like I was saying, throughout the years, sleep paralysis has been explained by like magic curses and monsters and demons.
Witches.
And witches and ghouls and monsters. All different cultures have different beliefs of what caused sleep paralysis in Egypt. Egyptians believed that it was jinns, which are like genies, but negative jinns. Maybe one day I'll talk about jinns. They're just not in Canada, though, and they're a little spooky for me. Indigenous people in South Africa believed that they were caused by something called the Tokoloshe, which is a dwarf-like water spirit that would come and like try to suffocate you in your sleep. And there was also a Turkish belief that it was called the Karabazin, which was a spirit-like creature that also was trying to strangle you in your sleep. A lot of like...
Can we just like... If you're dead, I mean, just please just continue on your way.
Right?
Don't paralyze
people. The thing too with a lot of these other like sleep paralysis demons in history has been that they always leave a very heavy weight on your chest. They always sit on you or try to suffocate you or give that kind of like mass.
In the Jerome Grand Hotel, that was some of the stories about
was like, that they were just feeling the heaviness like, on the chest.
Someone was on their chest.
Yeah. So it's just that is what's really common when it comes to sleep paralysis, ghoulies. Mm-hmm. But that's where the Hat Man's a little more unique.
Okay. Tell me.
He's never touched anyone. There's never been accounts of the Hat Man hurting people. He is a watcher. Oh. He is either directly above you or at the foot of your bed or at your doorway.
Oh.
He's always either making his way to you. Because the thing is, too, is I've heard that if you see him in your doorway, it's because you woke up before he got above you. If you saw him at your bed, it's because you woke up before he got over you. And I've read some things that he will always end up above you. Just depends when you wake up and catch them. I found a really funny article from some UFOlogists who believe that the Hat Man is actually a phenomena that like more paranormal than anything else. And they believe that they are known as the shadow people. Shadow people are like dark humanoid figures that visit from other planets. And the UFOlogists believe that they are those dark shadow people from, basically they believe that the Hat Man is a form of alien and he wears a hat to cover his deformed head and that he wears this trench coat to cover his weird looking body. Some Hat Man have been
seen. He's like, I gotta look good.
I got a dapper man. Yeah. And he tips his.
Well, he's like, what are you, if you're afraid of scaring people with your cone head, maybe just don't
stop watching
lurk.
Us when we're sleeping.
Yeah. Creep.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's one thing that he wears a hat and a cowl is another way that it's been described, mm-hmm. just to cover up the imperfection of their bodies, is one really interesting one that I read. I really like the idea of the shadow person. I do believe in shadow people.
You like getting watched?
But I don't believe in shadow people being like extraterrestrial. Mm-hmm. I think that shadow people are like the in-between of us and somewhere else. And I do think that there is a spiritual realm in between us that we just don't see. It's a whole other thing. It's like parallel to us, but they still walk among us and we just can't see it.
I'm open to anything.
The Hat Man has always been interesting for me though, because I personally have never experienced him. I always see memes though that's like, BRB, gonna go take 13 Benadryl to see the Hat Man. It's like people say they see him and they take drugs as well.
Well, that's a little green man.
Specifically
that, man.
Drowsy drugs, like things like Benadryl, sleep pills. Like he will appear when you've taken drugs that affect your sleep.
What
brain.
If we all have a Hat Man in our brain, but it only comes out when we're in a specific cycle of sleep? That's perfect.
A Hat Man godmother.
Yes. Well, what happened to this girl you know then?
Her story was just that she was like, hey, I know you do some spooky stuff. Let me tell you about this crazy experience I had last summer. And she'd never heard of the Hat Man. So mm-hmm. when I told her, I was like, hey, you're not the only one.
It did,
she did feel better. She was like, okay.
I would feel worse. I would be like,
oh, she was like, I'm not the only one. I'm not crazy. Like,
yeah,
she
but
was
then
worried
you'd be more
her
real.
House was... That's true. It is more real because there have just been like hundreds of people who claim to have seen the Hat Man. And another part of me is like, is it our psyche? We all know the Hat Man exists, quote unquote exists. So then if you're somebody who suffers from sleep paralysis, mm-hmm. does your brain just put that in to really spook you?
To wake you up.
Did you really get you out of that? But then... how come all people who experience sleep paralysis
don't see him
even if they know about him? Because I have suffered from sleep paralysis. I've woken up with sleep paralysis at least 10 times in my life.
Do you know what I did last
night? And I've never had any hallucinations during it.
Good. I wouldn't want you to. Last night I get out of bed. I think I was going to go to the bathroom. And then I just like fell down. Like I just like crumbled.
No.
And... I thankfully I crumbled like on my butt and back. My husband jumps out of bed. He's just like, and it's the only time I've heard him so concerned, because I guarantee you he's just like, those breasts were expensive. Don't land on the tits.
Not the boobies.
Not the boobies. But I fell down and I was like, no, actually, I'm okay. They
bounced you off the ground.
No, I didn't hit them. I didn't touch them at all.
I remember you saying
because you would have. Oh man, I would have been in so much pain.
Yeah,
the care in his voice. Fuck you, dude. Like, although I love you. Baby, if you're listening, I love you. Hashtag.
Yeah, it's something. Funny how some things can just make you jump up so fast and others don't. And honestly, like, sleep paralysis is that perfect combination of where nightmares can become too real because you're still half in the REM. So that's why hallucinations are also a lot easier when your eyes are open. You're still dreaming, though, because you're still paralyzed. And it's just... is it our brains or is it a real phenomena is the question. I'd love to know if any of our other listeners have experienced Hat Man. Like, yes, if you have seen or know of someone who has seen the Hat Man, experienced
call
the Hat Man.
Crime Stoppers at one.
please message us, DM us. Like, I want to hear about it. The last thing I wanted to touch on was I did try to see if there were any Indigenous and Canadian Indigenous beliefs surrounding sleep paralysis. Okay. I have a friend who's Cree, and she has always told me a lot about how sleep interpretation is really large in the Cree beliefs. And I couldn't specifically find anything Cree that she knew of when it came to sleep paralysis. I tried to look into some the Dene Za, if they had any writings online. I'm sure that there's some storytellers in town who would be able to tell me something.
Yeah.
But I did find some that work still Canadian based that do believe sleep paralysis, kind of negative demonology aspect of it. So both of them are in the Northwest Territories. There is a group Emily?
Who are we? I was going to say, well, I'm fucking Emily over there.
So Jesus. Sleep paralysis was readily recognized by a lot of different tribes. These were the two that I found, mainly have actual written stories about it. One is from the Baffin region, and they called the sleep paralysis the Ukamangirinik.
Nailed it.
Ukamangirinik. They referred to it as a shamanistic cosmology, which involved the individual's soul. And it's just, they're very vulnerable when you're sleeping because your soul can transport at that time. So when they, like that, they believed that that was going to come in and like could possibly hurt you. And a lot of people like watched people sleep to ensure that like protection.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but I don't need two people watching me sleep. I already got the Hat Man.
I already got my Hat Man.
Pervert. Speaking of watching people. When I was in Vancouver for the week in my cousin's apartment, and I'm looking across to the next building, and I saw this dude, like, posing, like, with his, like, shirtless selfies, and I was just like, you go, bro.
Watching him do his little pictures?
Yeah.
I love that. I was like,
pump it up, and then he saw me.
Oh, no. And then he was like...
You fucking saw me.
Deflated.
Oh, but then he was naked, but that's another story. Okay, continue.
There's another section I found in so that the Baffin region there, that's in Iqaluit.
Okay.
So all the ones I found are like very more like Western Northern Territories. I also found another one from Nunavut. Mm-hmm. And that was in the
Nunavut
Kivalik region. And that they call it the Aksukasinig. Aksukasinig.
Nailed that one as well.
If I am mispronouncing these, please tell me how to do it properly. I did look up like a breakdown. Both regions, when it comes to in Nunavut and Iqaluit, that really see, like in the Baffin region and the Kivalik region, they do believe that there are sleep paralysis dangers, that there are like entities that can come and basically disrupt the soul while you're sleeping because you are just in a very like vulnerable state. So I think it just like,
yeah, you're sleeping.
Exactly. It definitely speaks to like the wash cleansing when you wake up and having different like I know my friend who's Cree made Trey and I this beautiful marriage dream catcher with two intertwined weaving spaces, and I'm a huge believer in dream catchers. I do believe that they protect you from negative energy coming in and passing through your bedroom. And I think that that was like a huge part of it as well. In the Baffin region, I read that they do a lot of dream catchers to kind of help
for protection,
with the sleep paralysis. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, thanks, Chanel.
Hey,
I respect that. And now all I'm
hats off to the Hat Man.
Hatch off show. Good day, sir.
Yeah, literally, he is like the original, like, my lady.
Because
those guys are all creeps as well.
Man,
if you are a my guy, I'm sorry.
Also, I just hate the fact, like, I hate the thought of someone watching me sleep. Someone watching anyone sleep. When I was a kid, a junior high, this guy I know, his mom, he woke up and his mom was like hovering and like watching him sleep. And then she was praying for him, praying over him. I was like, that's cool. Maybe she was a Hat Man too.
She is the Hat Man.
Dun, 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 dun. Janelle, where can we find you if people want to find you on social media to track what you're doing with your rifles?
Yeah, if you want to follow me, you can find me on Instagram at Princess Lizard, the A is a 4.
That's hot. If you want to follow the podcast on Instagram, we're secrets_of_the_north_podcast, and on there you will find some delightful little tidbitties and news and updates. And then if you want to give me a little stocky poo, if you want to, as we call it, the hat, if you want to hat man me, if you want to give me a little hat man action, follow me on Instagram at @e_g.
Thanks so much for listening.
Thank you all. We love you.
Thanks for listening to this energeticcity.ca podcast. Energeticcity.ca is your only local and independent news in Northeast BC. To help keep us independent and to support this podcast, go to energeticcity.ca/join.